welcome to this special edition of the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler. As part of its Between the Lines video series, Cancer Network spoke with Dr. Liliana Bustamante, a hematologist and medical oncologist at Florida Cancer Specialists in Fort Myers, Florida, and Dr. Richard Kim, Service Chief of Medical Gastrointestinal Oncology and Senior Member in the Gastrointestinal Oncology Department at the Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. This conversation focused on the prognostic potential of circulating tumor DNA as a biomarker for patients with oligometastatic colorectal cancer.
Hello and welcome to Between the Lines, a Journal Club experience. Today's feature article is Detection of Molecular Residual Disease Using Personalized Circulating Tumor DNA Assay in Patients with Colorectal Cancer Undergoing Resection of Metastasis. My name is Dr. Richard Kim, GI oncologist at Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. Joining me today is my colleague, Dr. Liliana Bustamante, a hematologist and medical oncologist at Florida Cancer Specialists in Fort Myers, Florida. Welcome, Dr. Bustamante.
Thank you, Richard. It's nice to be doing Journal Club with you again. So I'm going to present the study design here. So basically, in this study, they enrolled patients with metastatic colorectal cancer with oligometastatic disease. They were being treated with curative intent. There was 112 patients enrolled, and they went through surgery, and they had ctDNA drawn after their surgery. About 39% of those patients underwent adjuvant chemotherapy, so not all patients were given adjuvant chemotherapy. And a percentage of those patients, of the total patients, about 80 patients, had a second ctDNA drawn at a different time point in the future, some of them after radiographic progression was done. And we're going to review some of the data that came out of this paper.
Thank you, Dr. Bustamante. So a couple of things I just want to add is that, you know, the purpose of the study design, as Dr. Bustamante mentioned, there were 112 patients, which was part of a cohort of a prospective study, which was being conducted in Italy. And the purpose of the study is trying to find out if the circulating tumor DNA is prognostic in the setting of patients who's undergoing curative surgery. Because as of right now, you know, only the biomarker that we typically use in the setting, as you know, Dr. Bustamante, in your clinic as well, is CEA, is what we typically check, you know, before and after surgery. But now we're trying to figure out the prognostic role of the circulating tumor DNA in this setting, which is a very novel idea.
And very relevant, because I feel like you and I have had many discussions about this sort of situations in the past, and this is good information to have as we treat our patients that we're trying to hopefully cure.
Yes, exactly. More information we have, better for the patient, definitely. So moving on to baseline demographics.
So baseline demographics are kind of to be expected for patients with metastatic colorectal cancer. Most patients were male. The average age was around 60-some years old. Most patients, about 56%, presented with synchronous metastasis, about 43% with metachronous metastasis. Most mets were to the liver, again, second place most common, the lung, and then the peritoneum. Most patients had left-sided tumors. Which we'll get to in the future, CEA levels measured preoperatively and postoperatively, or at time of progression, which will be interesting to compare how that, which is what we're currently using, compares to ctDNA. We'll get to that in a minute. When they treated, many patients, about 49% of patients were treated with chemotherapy prior to surgery, which is a very common practice. And they mentioned here what type of chemotherapy they were getting. In addition, some patients, as I mentioned initially during the study design, about 39% of patients were treated with post-operative chemotherapy. And one of the goals, I guess, of this is identifying which patients definitely benefit from additional treatment post-operatively, those patients that are going to be on higher risk. And can we identify those patients with ctDNA?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think this demographic that is in the study sort of reflects our patient population as well. As we know, Dr. Bustamante, we share patients where we have a patient with a resectable disease, and you know, do we give chemo before or after, or is it, do we give perioperative? Those are the questions that really some of the prospective trials that's out there try to answer that, but we don't have a good answer in terms of what to do, especially in patients who undergo a curative intent surgery and get chemo afterwards. You know, are we supposed to give chemo afterwards or not? And right now, only like biomarker that we have at this time is CEA. And I think once again, you know, whole purpose of the tumor DNA, the circum tumor DNA, is to help us, maybe to help us in the future to see which patient will benefit from the chemotherapy or not. But once again, the purpose of this study was not a predictive value of this testing, but more of a prognostic value. So this is the highlight of the paper. As Dr. Bustamante mentioned, all the patients in the study got a baseline draw of a circum tumor DNA. And in this study, about 59 patients had positive circum tumor DNA at the time of the baseline, which is post-surgical. And the median time that was about a month when they drew the blood. And about 23 patients were tumor DNA negative. Okay. However, if those patients had more than one baseline draw, so baseline and another blood draw at the follow-up, the patients who were, there were 23 patients who were negative at the beginning, three of them remained negative while other became positive. So which means that basically that your sensitivity of this testing will go up if you have more than one baseline blood draw. Okay, so I think, you know, if you look at the just one time baseline blood draw, the sensitivity of the testing was around 70-75%. However, if you do more than one baseline blood draw, whether it is at certain follow-up, 6 months, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, the sensitivity will go up to 80-85%. So if you look at the correlation between a one-time baseline blood draw of the circum tumor DNA positivity and try to correlate that with disease-free survival and overall survival, as you see from this Kaplan-Meier curve, there's a clear correlation between the positive circulating tumor DNA and the worst prognosis in terms of the disease-free survival and overall survival. And the patients who are negative for circulating tumor DNA at the time of at the baseline, those patients tend to do much, much better, which is highlighted by the blue line in the Kaplan-Meier curve.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. We said this is kind of the highlight of the paper. Obviously, we see a big significant separation of the lines, even when they're using just one time point, and it only will get better when we look at the ones with the two time points. And then specifically for the population of patients that test negative, whether it be once or hopefully twice, those patients tend to do very well, as we'll see in regards to survival. So definitely, has implications as to what we tell the patients about their prognosis and potentially what we decide to do for their surveillance and added treatment. So I think this is going to play a nice role, hopefully, in our management.
All right, so moving on to the force plot, Dr. Bustamante, if you want to go over this.
So I think the biggest takeaway point of this is that they're really the only variable that showed a statistical significance correlation with disease-free survival was really the circulating tumor DNA. And they included a lot of different things, as you can see there, age, sex, site of metastasis, whether they had positive or margins were positive or negative, like R0, 1, or 2 resections, whether they had post-operative treatment, pre-operative treatment, where the tumor started. And the only thing that had a significant correlation with improvement in disease-free survival was the presence or absence of circulating tumor DNA. So I think that it's of a lot of significance because we tend to not know exactly how to use all these other things that we can get, like the information that we have there. And in this case, circulating tumor DNA is something that we can easily get that could help guide us in knowing how the patient's going to do and hopefully guide our treatments going forward.
So moving on, as we mentioned before, there are certain patients in the study that had a two time point drawn, okay? And so if you look at the patients that had two blood drawn at two different time points and not treated with systemic therapy, okay, there is once again a huge correlation, right, between the positivity of the tumor DNA and the worst outcome. Okay, so patients who were tumor DNA negative in both 2 points did a lot better. Okay, clearly telling us that this, you know, is a correlation. There's a correlation between overall prognosis and the tumor DNA being negative. And as mentioned in prior two slides, that if you have a multiple draw, the sensitivity tends to go up as well. So clearly telling us that there is definitely a prognosis role of drawing tumor DNA in this setting in patients who undergo surgery who do not get chemotherapy in this study.
Yes, I mean, the survival here is impressive. The overall survival of the patients that had a negative ctDNA on two time draws is 100%. So can't get any better than that in terms of giving patients reassurance and about, you know, their test and about the fact that they're going to do well.
Great. So Dr. Bustamante, any last comments?
Well, I think, as I mentioned during our conversation, I think there's a nice role for this in the clinic, especially now when we don't have a lot of data to guide us. And when we know that CEA level, as this paper showed, we didn't discuss that today, but this paper showed that CEA levels do not have very good sensitivity in predicting who's going to progress or not as compared to this test. And so in this case, I think ctDNA will help us, predict or try to predict patients' prognosis or risk of recurrence and hopefully help guide how we follow them and how we treat them. And one other thing that I think the paper said that was interesting is that ctDNA sometimes became positive several months ahead of patients having a radiographic progression, which oftentimes, you know, not always, but oftentimes leads to patients presenting with symptoms and we kind of us chasing the disease versus staying ahead of it. So I think hopefully this will be something that we can start applying in our practice.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bustamante. So Dr. Bustamante, I think as we discuss sort of the highlights of the paper, what are some of the key takeaways from this paper from your perspective?
I think from my perspective, a few things. First off, circulating tumor DNA has great sensitivity and specificity for detecting or predicting patients' progression, especially when it's done over two time points, postoperatively and then at a different time point. That certainly increases sensitivity and specificity above all the tests that we currently have available and gives us the ability of identifying patients that will progress radiographically a few months ahead, which will make a difference in what we do to follow them or to treat them when this test becomes positive. It's the only thing that had a significant, statistically significant association with disease-free survival, as we mentioned before. So I think that's a great takeaway as well. So I think this is going to have nice implications for our practice.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And I think, you know, the circulating tumor DNA, as you know, is currently approved for stage 2 and stage 3 disease, more as a prognosis marker. So obviously, this article does not deal with stage 2 and 3, but more of a stage 4 disease, who are what we call no evidence of disease, right? After surgical resections, everything's gone. But the question is, you know, what are the risks of those tumor reoccurrence? And I think, you know, addition of this tumor DNA is definitely based on this paper is a prognostic indicator that it will predict. It's prognostic in terms of who will have worse disease-free survival and who will have a worse overall survival. Now, I think, you know, moving in the future, I think whether this biomarker could be predictive or not will be another question. So I think that the dilemma that Dr. Bustamante, you and I will be facing is if after surgery, if the tumor DNA, circulating tumor DNA is positive, then what do we do at that time? Do we give chemo, understanding that there is no radiographic finding, no radiographic evidence of disease? Okay, if you do give chemo, how long do you give it to? How long do you give it for? You know, 3 months, 6 months, or do you give it until tumor DNA goes away? Or what happens if tumor DNA never goes away, right? So I think those are some of the clinical questions that we have that we don't have answer to. But clearly, as you mentioned, this is a prognostic biomarker that we can use in conjunction with the radiographic imaging on also CEA as well to sort of help better guide patients in terms of what to do after surgery.
Right. And I think, unfortunately, we already have that dilemma, right? These patients are patients that are diagnosed with stage 4 and quote unquote incurable from the beginning. And then later on, we say, hey, listen, you don't have a lot of metastasis. Let's try to get you to no evidence of disease, which is kind of what every patient with cancer desires. But, you know, I think specifically when this test is negative, at least on two standpoints, I think it will give us a lot of reassurance that more therapy is not needed. So we're not creating toxicities that come from therapy. I think you're exactly right that we don't know what we will have to do clinically for patients that are positive without this, without radiographic disease. Maybe do we follow them closer? Do we do different things, different type of testing so that when they do become positive, we act? But I think having this data is going to also help maybe incorporate this in future clinical trials, right? When we're evaluating the need for chemotherapy or the need for adjuvant therapy post-surgery, using ctDNA and correlating that with what we do with whatever intervention we're testing is going to also help us interpret this better.
So, you know, other question that comes up is that, you know, how does this, you know, paper sort of contribute to our understanding of use of ctDNA as a biomarker for response to a treatment? And, you know, my opinion is that, you know, this is a more of a prognostic marker at this time, not a quite a predictive marker. So it definitely tells us a prognosis how well the patient is going to do after surgery, whether tumor is going to come back or not. I think that's what this circulating tumor DNA is used for. And I personally think this is a better version of CEA. As we know, in a clinic, you know, we use CEA as a biomarker, right? It's not a very sensitive biomarker, right? Sensitivity of CEA is probably 40% at best. So it is not a good biomarker, but that's what we typically use. But using ctDNA, it is a better version of biomarker where the sensitivity is much higher, maybe 75%, 80%. So I think this is how I vision how I see the ctDNA at this time. Once again, moving forward, I think this should be incorporated into a clinical study where we make a clinical decision based on the positive tumor DNA and negative ctDNA. I think that's the future. But right now, it seems like it is very prognostic. Understand that still there are a percentage of patients that tumor will be false negative or false positive. So it is not 100% testing. But however, I think moving forward, hopefully those techniques will get better and we'll have a better technology where we will decrease the chances of having a false positivity or false negativity.
Absolutely. One thing I think about sometimes, and I'm sure, I mean, this comes up in my clinic and I'm sure it comes up a ton in your clinic, is patients that, for example, have metastatic disease that have been on treatment for a while and their scans became negative a while ago, right? There's no evidence of disease on scans for a while and they're still on chemotherapy, you know, week after week and they're doing well, but they're still on chemo and they're always asking, how long am I going to do this for? And it's very easy for us to say when they have something that we're measuring, that we're following, that's not growing, et cetera. But when there's no evidence of disease for a while, then it becomes a question about, like, am I doing something? Am I adding more toxicity or not? And in that setting, again, this is not ready for us to make clinical decisions like that. But when patients decide that they definitely want a chemotherapy break or something like that, that they need it because of toxicities or whatever, having a negative ctDNA may give at least me a bit of peace of mind that at least right in that moment, you know, there's not a lot of disease or any disease that is detectable. So again, we have to take this with a grain of salt, but in certain scenarios that do come up in clinic, this may be an extra tool to help us.
You know, this paper gives us a lot of insight, right? And the role of using circulating tumor DNA in the setting of resectable metastatic colorectal cancer. However, it does raise a lot of questions, right, that we don't have an answer to. So I think one of the questions that came up was that, once again, this trial didn't control what kind of chemo patient got before or after. In other words, some patient got chemo before and never got chemo afterwards, or vice versa. Some patient got surgery first and got chemo afterwards. But I think the clinical question that sort of bring that this paper does bring up is that in patients, let's say get chemo for 6 months prior to surgery, let's say FOLFOX for 6 months prior to a surgery, and they go undergo surgery. And if the tumor DNA is positive afterwards, what do you do in those patients, right? I mean, do you start FOLFIRI those patients, or do you watch them until there's a radiographic evidence of reoccurrence? I think those are the questions that we don't have answer to, because clearly if you have a positive circulating tumor DNA, you're most likely that tumor will come back. Obviously the lag time, it will be months, but it will eventually come back. So the question is, should you start chemo right away or should you wait until there is a radiographic finding? So I think that's the dilemma that I think a lot of clinicians will face when we start using this circulating tumor DNA. Any thoughts, Dr. Bustamante?
I agree completely with that. That's probably the biggest question that this paper is raising, and especially because adding those therapies doesn't come with its own bag of side effects. Are we doing anything for their overall survival or sure. prognosis yes. by adding them earlier before progression? If progression never comes, when do we stop? You know, so absolutely is things that will need to be investigated going forward. And I think that's going to be the biggest issue with interpreting this test in the clinic.
So in your opinion, Dr. Bustamante, you know, what can we learn from this paper that may really impact our practice? The general physicians who treat colorectal cancer in communities, your thoughts your in terms of how this paper may impact you know, their practice or our practice?
Well, specifically when in the population that is being studied in this paper, and I've had you know several patients over the past few years like this. These are patients that have done chemotherapy, usually in my setting, and then go to surgery and are you know NED after surgery. I think doing this test, I would say with two negative tests at different standpoints, I think would give me some reassurance that I can just observe them for a while, and I can give reassurance to the patient that we're going to be hopefully in good grounds because of this paper, right? Showing 100% overall survival in those patients that tested negative twice. It becomes a little trickier for patients that have a positive circulating tumor DNA. I probably would do their surveillance a little closer and incorporate CEA checkups maybe a little bit closer until I detect radiographic progression. If they had a lot of disease prior to surgery, I will have the discussion with the patient about whether it's worth doing some adjuvant therapy and seeing if the circulating tumor DNA becomes negative, with the understanding that, you know, I have really no data to base this on. But I think especially for the patients that test negative twice, there's a lot of anxiety that comes with having stage four disease and going through all the therapy and going through this big surgery. Those patients will get a lot of, I guess, peace of mind. And so would I, that they are likely to do very well.
Great. So I think, you know, as you mentioned, I think the key point here is that if you do it two time points, that is a much of a stronger predictor of patient outcome. And I think it's been clearly shown that here, along with other papers as well, that they studied in stage two and stage three colorectal cancer patient. So I think the theme of, you know, more time points used, the better predictive of outcome has been consistent through most of the papers, at least in colorectal cancer. Some of the, you know, next step is that obviously I think this paper and maybe the other paper that's currently out there have sort of established the role of ctDNA in colorectal cancer as a more of a prognostic biomarker, right? If it's positive, most likely tumor will reoccur and it's associated with inferior overall survival and disease-free survival. I think that's been sort of established, you know, based on many papers. But I think the question is, you know, how can we use this circulating tumor DNA to justify the treatment, right? So can we make this a more predictive biomarker? In other words, if the ctDNA is positive, if I give chemo right away, does that affect overall survival, just as Dr. Bustamante mentioned? You know, is that going to affect an overall outcome or not? And I think, you know, using this DNA to make our decision, clinical decision, will be the next step. And I think some of the trials that are ongoing right now, in whether it's rectal cancer or colon cancer, are trying to use the ctDNA to be a decision point. So whether it's positive or negative, you'll be randomized to one arm or to the other arm. And I think that's the key in the future to decide to use this not only as a prognostic marker, but also as a predictive marker. Any last thoughts, Dr. Bustamante?
No, I agree completely with what you said. I think this is the kind of the theme of our discussion today. I think it's the ctDNA is going to be kind of the future of how we try to make these decisions, or at least help know, prognosis for these patients. And then hopefully as we incorporate this in clinical trials, you just mentioned, we're going to be able to use it clinically with more backup of the decisions that we're making.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Bustamante, for joining me in this discussion regarding metastatic colorectal cancer.
Forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.